Mr. Secretary General, Mr. President, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, I have the great pleasure to greet Mr. Jens Stoltenberg and Mr. Aleksandar Vučić, in fact, at a very special event, which we did call a special event, but it's also special because we are opening the Belgrade Security Forum more than a week earlier than the real forum is going to happen. So, of course, we managed to confuse a lot of media with when, what are we doing. Well, this is a special event of the Belgrade Security Forum, and we are using the opportunity that the Secretary General of NATO is visiting Serbia and to have this conversation with the two of them in order to, in fact, enhance the basic idea. Belgrade Security Forum was founded 8 years ago. 7 years ago, this is the eighth forum. It is an annual event, and it is devoted to one basic idea, to make Serbia and the region part of a general debate about major issues related to security and international relations, and in the same time, to bring that debate home. We want to be part of a global conversation because we are part of that world. That's the basic idea Belgrade Security Forum is all about. We are nourishing dialogue. We are nourishing different views to meet at this podium. And today we are very, very happy, as I already said, that we'll have a conversation between the two of you. We all know that the relationship with NATO and Serbia is a complex one, with some difficult episodes, with some difficult events. But in the same time, we have a long-standing cooperation now, and it is developing by day. This is why you are here. And I think that this cooperation, this conversation is extremely important. Belgrade Security Forum is cooperating with NATO through the Public Diplomacy Division for years. And I want to thank them and the NATO office in Belgrade especially because that cooperation, in fact, made possible that 3 years ago we had Mr. James Apaturai having a conversation with Mr. Ivica Dačić, our Minister of Foreign Affairs. Yes, last year it was Rose Gottemiller and Anna Brnabić, and this year we have you. So we are climbing the hierarchy, as you can see. My personal note that I would like to add to this conversation is that you are not the first Stoltenberg at the Belgrade Security Forum. 3 years ago, we had a special guest, your father, Thorvald Stoltenberg, who received the honorary citizenship of Belgrade as a proposal coming from our forum. And I must tell you, we share your sorrow, but we also for losing him this year and your families. But in the same time, I want to share with you a moment of joy. Having Mr. Stoltenberg with us was a real moment of joy for, I think, every single person who participated in that event. My first question, and by the way, I have to describe a little bit our idea, how to, in fact, have this conversation more dynamic. I will have three questions, the same for Mr. Stoltenberg and Mr. Vučić. As our guest, Mr. Stoltenberg will be the first to answer. And my first question is related, in fact, to the main purpose of your visit. You just came back from the exercise. Very important exercise, bringing, in my opinion, a new input, a new picture to the Serbian audience about NATO-Serbia cooperation, and I would like to hear your first impressions of the exercise.
My impressions about the exercise are very good, but before I say some more words about that, let me just thank you for your kind words about Torvald, my father. As you know, he was a very, very devoted friend of this region, of Serbia, and he was extremely honored when he received his honorary citizenship of Belgrade. And actually, I have learned a lot from him because he taught me the importance of having friends in many places in the world, but especially that we maintained our very close relationship as a family to Belgrade and to Serbia, because, as many of you know, I spent my childhood here in Belgrade in the 1960s. Then the exercise. the exercise is very important for at least two reasons. One is that we are strengthening the capacity of Serbia, of NATO allied countries, of partner countries, almost 40 countries, around 3,000 personnel, to work together in addressing natural disasters, the consequences. Earthquakes, forest fires, floods, and these are the kinds of natural disasters we have seen in this region, but also in other places in Europe. And with climate change, we also need perhaps to prepare for even more of these kind of natural disasters, at least some of them. So it is important to bring countries together, enable them to work together across borders, but also to bring military and civilian capabilities together, personnel, equipment, so they really can mobilize the full capacity or the full strength of societies when they respond to natural disasters. So that's the first reason why this exercise is important. But the second reason is that it shows that NATO and Serbia are working together, that we are strengthening our partnership. And I think the best way to show that we are good partners is not through speeches. President Vučić and I, we are able to speak for a long time, both of us, and we are good friends. But of course, the speeches are important, but even more important are actions on the ground. And the exercise shows that when we speak about partnership, Serbia, NATO, it's not only words, but actually also deeds. And therefore, I'm extremely glad to be here together with the president and to open the exercise together with him.
Thank you. Mr. Vučić.
Thank you. First of all, once again, I wanted to say that Jens Stoltenberg, as a Secretary General of NATO, is very welcome to our country, and he personally is a true friend of Serbia, and there are no doubts about it. You mentioned Thorvald Stoltenberg, and I was honored and privileged to meet him in his apartment in Oslo, and will never forget it, because during that meeting I learned a lot about public diplomacy and possible future steps of Serbia regarding regional crises and how to maintain peace and tranquility in the region. Once again, today's exercise, it was really important. I saw it for the first time. I saw for the first time many things, to tell you the truth. It's something very concrete, you know. I'm not well known about the content of all these words, interoperability and, you know, all these expert words. But today we saw how our people from an entire region and Europe-wide, even worldwide, can be helpful to each other in a very difficult and under the very difficult circumstances regarding forest fires, floods, car accidents and everything else. And we saw it in a very concrete terms. And as a matter of fact, it helped us a lot to realize what we as a Serbia need to do in the future, what we should, how we should, and what we should do regarding the new equipment for our forest fires or for our guys that are saving lives in the different car accidents, you know. And at the same time, what was the most important all those 2,000 people from 38 countries, they were living together for several days, they were learning from each other, they were creating friendship between themselves. And thirdly, which is maybe the most important, for the first time, some of our people learned how you can use artificial intelligence, how we can use Science for Peace and Security. That's the name of a program that we have with NATO, because people mainly think that we have, that when you speak to NATO, it's always about, I don't know, F-16 or what kind of tanks. No, it's about something more important. And for the first time, we realized that if we call someone in the region for help, for assistance, that we can immediately know where the every single rescuer is, you know, and that's what we can do together. We couldn't do it so far, and now with NATO support, with their programs, with their plans, with this kind of cooperation, we can deliver it to our own citizens. And that's the real news for us, and these kind of concrete actions, as Jens said, they speak more than all our words. And I thought and I saw for the first time, you know, people from Bosnia, they were all together from Republika Srpska and from the other part of Bosnia, Federation of Bosnia and Herzegovina. And they were all satisfied that they were here together. And we learned a lot from them. And I think that they learned something from our people. It will enable us to improve our deliverance in the future and to save more lives, to save more lives of an ordinary people. That's the main purpose. That's why I am very satisfied. And on the other hand, the visit of Jens has been always very successful, because he is very smart, in a way, politician, not only a professional as the main person of NATO. He knows how to send the very best messages to Serbian people. Not only that, it's very obvious that he likes this country, but he was saying very important words about 1999, expressing his deepest condolences to our civilian victims, and which was received in a very great way by our people in Mladenovac as well. Sorry that I took a lot of your time. It was very important for us, and we really appreciated the role of Jens and the role of NATO in this situation.
I very much hope that this exercise will help both further cooperation, but also mutual understanding about what this cooperation is about. My next question would be in a different direction. You already mentioned climate change, natural disasters. President Vučić mentioned artificial intelligence. There are so many global challenges to security these days, and unfortunately it seems that we can't talk about the decrease of those challenges. On the contrary, what do you expect as a response? What can be done within the NATO and broader and beyond in responding to all these major challenges?
I think the most important thing we need to realize is that the future is very hard to predict. That has always been the case, but perhaps even more so now. So I'm always very skeptical when I listen to people that tells me what will happen in the future, because they have normally been wrong in the past. When I was in my previous life, before I became a politician back in Norway, I worked in the Central Bureau of Statistics in Norway. I was an economist trying to predict oil prices. And we were wrong all the time. So therefore, we actually gave up to try to predict oil prices. Instead, we developed a strategy how to deal with uncertainty, how to deal with shifts in oil prices, to have a robust strategy managing uncertainty. And I bring some of the same thinking into the security domain, because very few people were able to predict the Arab Spring. Very few people were able to predict the illegal annexation of Crimea. Very few people were able to predict the rise of ISIS. I remember as late as early 2014, hardly anyone had heard about ISIS. And then a few months later, ISIS controlled a large part of Iraq, Syria, and are actually threatening Baghdad. So to try to predict is extremely difficult. So what we have to do is to prepare for the unforeseen and be able to react quickly. And therefore, what NATO has done is that we have increased our readiness, our preparedness, our ability to react quickly if needed, from whatever the direction the threat or the challenge comes. We have done so partly by increasing the readiness of our forces, partly by strengthening our intelligence services, the way we work on intelligence, strengthening cyber, and also dealing with what we call hybrid threats. And we see all of these challenges at the same time. We see a more assertive Russia, illegally annexing Crimea. We see turmoil to the south, terrorism, ISIL. But we see also more and more threats and challenges within cyberspace. The last thing I would say about this is the following, is that one of the challenges we are faced with is that it's harder to distinguish peace from war or conflict from stability. There is a more blurred line. I grew up in decades after the Second World War, and in Norway, where I come from, we knew exactly when it started. It started the 9th of April 1940, and it ended the 8th of May. And it took place in some specific countries in Norway, but not in Sweden. Now, it's very hard to say when did the war against ISIL start. It's hard to say when it ends, and it's actually hard to say say exactly where it takes place. It takes place in Iraq and Syria, but also in Asia, in North Africa, and in cyberspace. So we have to accept that we also live in a time where we are faced with what we call below Article 5 aggressive actions. For instance, the use of a chemical nerve agent in UK, or cyber attacks against our democratic institutions, or hybrid warfare, as we saw in Crimea. So be prepared for the unforeseen, increase your readiness. That's the best way to prepare for the future.
Thank you. Mr. President, how can Serbia
ask Jens once again?
And please ask him, I'm happy if you have a question.
No, you should ask Jens once again about this, because we are too small, to discuss these global issues. What can I say about climate changes? Yeah, we can support all the efforts done by international community, but our industry, our economy is still too weak that we can play an important role. But as a member of international community, yes, we do our very tiny, very small contribution to that. But I would, and we can mean something in these kind of regional frameworks, and that's what is reserved for us. But speaking about something that Jens was mentioning, I would add something that we feel, and most probably I'm not right, although I would like to hear his opinion on oil and the other commodities prices. That would be very good for us to hear it. In a way, we would be able to plan it much better, what we're going to do with our economy, how we're going to deal with these issues. But I absolutely agree with him that tackling uncertainty and possible instabilities are the main tasks of, let's say, NATO, but big countries, big powers all over the world. For us is to avoid regional clashes, to maintain tranquility and peace within the region, which is the real prerequisite for the economic progress. Otherwise, we wouldn't face it, and our citizens will be less and less satisfied. And in that sense, I see a lot of challenges in front of us in the future, and it would be great if I would be wrong, And yes, he's right, we are very often wrong. I still have some concerns. And but anyway, I wanted to, what I said to Jens today, privately or a few days ago, doesn't matter. There is something that I guaranteed him, and I guaranteed our citizens and an entire Europe and world as well. We'll do our best as Serbia. Absolutely, we'll invest huge efforts into maintaining peace and tranquility, which means that we do know what was done to us, what we did to the others, and we need to skip and to avoid the same types of mistakes from the past, taking care of our future in a very rational way, although it's not going to be easy because we are just entering a new era of emotion spreading and emotion selling. And that's one of the reasons why it's going to be a lot of situations deteriorated, not improved. But anyway, we'll do our best to carry on dialogue with Pristine Albanians. We'll do our best to establish better relationship with new Bosnian leadership. And I think that there is no doubt that we'll have to have better relationship with Croatia. That's something what we can contribute to. It's not big, it's not that important in a way that Jens was stressing about all the other big players. And one small thing would just add to everything that Jens was speaking about. I'm a bit afraid of the global situation because nobody's really listening to anyone in the world, and there is no real hierarchy in the world. Everybody is doing everything in accordance only with their own interests, and it's a bigger political mess than ever, although no one wants to admit it, no one wants to acknowledge it. But hopefully there are many responsible people that will take care of this kind of uncertainties and big challenges in the future and for the future. From our point of view and from our side, we'll do our best to not to create big headaches for big powers, but firstly and mainly and most importantly, not to create any sort of headaches to our own people, to secure our own people's future and to create better economic environment, to be able boasting ourselves of boosted economy, growth rates, better attraction of foreign investments, and that's something that's recently been reachable for Serbia, and hope that we're going to do it even in a much better way in the future.
If I can just add an additional question to what you just said, in a number of regional panels, you mentioned the necessity to create a kind of a small, I dare to say, economic community within the region. Where are these efforts at the moment? Do you feel that there is more readiness than there was at the beginning of this debate?
I'll do my best to be as brief as it is possible. I don't know whether Jens knew it or not, but I think that Telekom Serbia wanted to buy Deutsche Telekom shares, if I'm not mistaken, in Albania, and they had a very best bid, but the Minister of Telecommunications from Albania didn't agree on that because he was saying that Serbia was not very welcome in investing into that part of telecommunicating system in Albania. I'm going to speak to Edi Rama today or tomorrow, and hopefully we'll overcome this situation. But my most important political idea is to create unique market in an entire Western Balkan region. And not only that, it means that we should create very similar or almost the same subsidies and incentives, that we should have the same tax policies. That would attract a lot more investors into all our countries. Serbia today has 56% of overall investments in the Western Balkans. We would get more and they would get much more if we do so. And I will never give up on this, and I think that we'll be able to agree on this with Bosnia. So far we had only positive responses from Albania before this case, and Edi, he always agreed on this issue with us. I spoke recently with President Djukanovic on this issue. I think that we'll get his support on this. I talked to Zaev, as I said recently, and then we'll have to do it with Pristina, and that's it. You know, it's something that will work much better for the sake and for the benefits of all our people in an entire region. That doesn't matter who provided or who started speaking about this idea. I think that Rama and I myself discussed that for the first time when we met each other, but it's good that it's recognized by European Union, and it's good that we can carry on our talks on this. That's the real future. That's what we need to do. Doesn't matter who's going to be a part of European Union within 5 years or 10 years, and who'll need 20 years for that. Before that, we need to do something for our citizens, and that's something of the biggest significance for all of us.
Thank you. Mr. Secretary General, you already mentioned several times during this last visit, the actual visit, some of the major regional challenges that President Vučić just addressed. Would you be so kind to tell us a little bit more how you see the region and how you see the challenges within the region and for the region?
So first of all, I think it is important to remind ourselves on the fact that this region has come a long way compared to where it was during the 1990s, where we had wars, conflicts, suffering, and really, really difficult situation. I'm not saying that there are no problems, no tensions, no challenges, but I'm only saying that not so many, a couple of decades ago, the situation was much worse and dangerous not only for the people in this region who suffered and were killed in conflicts, but also for the rest of Europe, because instability in this region is also, of course, a great security risk for the whole of Europe and for actually the whole of NATO. So let me start by recognizing the progress. Also, the encouraging signs we see when it comes to economic developments, at least in parts of the region, because the progress, both when it comes to security, stability, and economic growth, is uneven. But in Serbia, for instance, we have seen stronger economic growth. We have seen some strong and important reforms. We have seen an improved fiscal balance, which is extremely important, because without managing the fiscal balance, the debts, then any country will really sooner or later end into deep troubles. So, of course, there are economic concerns in Belgrade, as it is in any other capital of Europe, but I'm encouraged by the progress and the determination and the leadership of Alexander in continuing to pursue these reforms and to modernize Serbia. Good for Serbia, but good for the whole region and good for Europe. Then I also welcome the ideas to have a single economic, to open up the economies and to have perhaps a kind of more integrated economic market. And the more progress you can make on that, the better, both for the economy but also for security. because I strongly believe that trade economic relations also creates more trust, more interdependence, and by creating that, the foundation for nationalistic rhetoric or for mistrust or distrust is weakened, because economic cooperation, trade, investments actually increases trust and interdependency, and that also helps to reduce security risks. Of course, the easiest way to achieve that, the single market, is to join the EU. So therefore, I really hope that Serbia and other neighbors in this region will succeed in joining EU. I can say that because I actually tried to convince Norwegians to join twice, and I was not successful. Norway is the only country in the world which has negotiated an accession treaty with the European Union and then voted it down in a referendum not only once or twice. So if you can succeed what Norway didn't manage, then good luck, and I really, really hope that you will succeed. NATO has of course a presence in this region. We have a history here. As we have a history here, we the first time actually NATO went into military operations beyond our territory was in the Balkans in the 1990s, helped to end wars. We continue to have a presence here, different kinds of presence. We have presence in Belgrade, in Sarajevo, in Skopje, and of course we have KFOR, which is there to protect all communities, of course also Serbs, and to help to keep a safe and secure environment. Then, what concerns me, despite all this progress, because there is progress, is of course the tendencies we see to return of very strong nationalistic rhetoric. That's not good, and that can again bring us back to situations we very much have to avoid going back into. And then, you know, it's only the people in this region, in Southeast Europe or Balkans, which can solve the problems of this region. It cannot be solved in Brussels. We can help, we can assist, we can perhaps give advice if you ask us for advice, but we cannot solve the problems of this region. They have to be solved by the people here. And therefore, I urge calm and restraint and not return to nationalistic rhetoric. Then some people ask me, is it possible? Yes, of course it's possible. I use my own country as an example because that's the country I know best. But you know, since the Viking era, and for centuries, we used to be in war with each other up in the Scandinavian country. We fought each other all the time. We were fighting Swedes all the time. And they fought us. And we were ruled partly by Copenhagen, partly by Stockholm. And it was really the Nordic territory, the Nordic countries were actually the part of Europe where you had the highest number of wars for many centuries. Now we are the best friends. We make a lot of jokes about Swedes. They make jokes about us. But we are the best possible friends. So if Swedes, Danes, and Norwegians can become friends, of course, the people of the Western Balkans can become friends. So just continue. Make progress. Work with your partners and your friends and neighbors, and then this will be a very prosperous and peaceful part of Europe.
Thank you. There are many people who believe that, in fact, the Nordic model is the model we should follow, the Nordic Council, and even your effort to have a joint security strategy for that region. Mr. President, would you like to comment? It seemed to me that you would.
Yeah, there is only one problem. There are no jokes between Serbs and Croats, let's say. No jokes at all. But anyway, hopefully there would be a lot of jokes between us. There are several challenges in front of us. The biggest challenge, as it has always been, economic challenges we have already, in a way, taken care of. And it's, if we'll be able, as I said, as a prerequisite for that, to maintain peace and tranquility, it'll be only better and better. Secondly, we have huge problem in our relationship between Belgrade and Pristina. We have different stances, different attitudes over several incidents that occurred in Kosovo recently. And I discussed it, had a chance to discuss it with Jens for several hours. And we cannot agree on everything because we are in a different position. But what we agreed on, what is very important for all of us, and particularly for Serbia, for me, is the fact that we agreed that if there is going to be any kind of possible challenges, possible incidents, possible mutinies, unrests, whatever, that we should immediately contact each other, that I'm allowed to call Secretary General immediately and he'll respond to me, and have to say that I'm profoundly grateful to him, because the easiest part for me to contact someone during that latest incident in Kosovo was with to create that contact with Jens. And to tell you the truth, it was easier to contact Americans than at least some of Europeans. And I'm very thankful to Jens that he was not hiding himself, as many people were doing so, because nobody wants to take responsible decisions, you know, when you face tough situations. But someone has to do it. Someone has to deal with difficult situations. Someone has to make decisions. Otherwise, we can lose everything within few moments. And hopefully he reacted, we reacted properly, and we avoided bigger problems in north of Kosovo. Still, of course, we see differently the role of NATO in 1999. It's justified by our friend Jens in a different ways. We think that there is no justification for that, but we need to live. And we need to see what we're going to do in the future. And we need to put more things on a rational level. That's what we need to do. And I think that what we've been organizing in last several years, was it has always been helpful to Serbia. It really has been very helpful to our country. And that's what our people need to hear. I don't know, whenever I say something good about today's exercise, people would say, you Vučić, go to hell, you're a biggest traitor or something like that. Okay, whatever you say, but do we have some benefits from that? Yes, we do. If something happens to you or to your kids, if some of you will have a car accident, our people will save you much easier than they were doing it before. And that's what we need to work for. And to tell you the truth, there is nobody else that we can lean on, that we can rely on in Kosovo. Jens was saying we are there to protect all the communities, including Serbs. I think that there are only Serbs to be protected in Kosovo. It doesn't matter. Whatever he says about it, whatever I say about it, the fact is that, after all, they need to protect Serbs. I don't care how he's going to call it, or he shouldn't care how I'm going to name it, or no, that's the content, and that's what is very important. And to tell you the truth, since we talked about this, and so since we established this kind of our mutual arrangement, how we're going to call each other, how we're going to contact each other, how we're going to communicate in the future, I feel much better. I feel much better because, after all, people in Serbia will always accuse myself saying, okay, you did nothing for your people in Kosovo. You did nothing to secure them. And security and safety issue are the most important issues for our people in Kosovo. Well, now I feel better, you know. At least I know that I'll always be able to reach him. And then we can analyze, then we can put different views on the table to analyze what was really happening, whether our estimations or their assessments were right, or were wrong, or vice versa, or quite the opposite, doesn't matter. That's what we need to do, and I hope that will calm down the situation in Kosovo, particularly among the Serbs. I cannot tell you how people were frightened in the last several days, particularly after very new threats that were coming from south part of Mitrovica, and I think that people in Kosovo feel at least a bit safer today than it was yesterday. Speaking mainly about Serbs, and thank you for delivering these good messages. We'll have a lot more challenges in the region. It's not an easy situation for you, for us. We always support our neighbors in Macedonia. Speaking about Bosnia, hopefully we'll have good relationship. We'll improve our relationship with Bosnia. I really hope so. But as Jens said, nobody knows what future will bring to us. But anyway, that's what we need to work on very hard, to invest a lot of our efforts. That's what we will do. And what I once again can guarantee him and can guarantee to my people, to our people, it's that we'll do our best to refrain ourselves of all stupid, either political, either other different moves in the future. We'll do our best to keep and to maintain peace and tranquility. That must do it for us. That's the main prerequisite for the progress in all the other areas. Thank you.
Thank you both. If you agree, I would like now to see whether there are some questions from the audience. Our time is very short, since both of you are to fly out of Belgrade in a very short time. Questions?
There is one. Hello, Jelena Milić, Center for Euro-Atlantic Studies, Belgrade. First of all, huge congratulations to all organizers of this event. As Mr. Licht pointed out, it's not just this one event, it has been a serial of high-level important events which definitely have helped understanding of Serbia public, of significance of Serbia-NATO cooperation. Of course, I would like also to use this opportunity to commend President Vučić for some recent steps towards political West and NATO that somehow has fell below the radar of the global pundits who are discussing Serbia and the region recently. Secretary General, your kind words and apparently your understanding and respect for our military neutrality are very well received in the Serbian media, at least in the period when you are around. Serbian media has these days also been highlighting the fact that you are by no means interfering in Serbian decision-making process, which they find as a very important. But there is a period when you leave Belgrade, another 360 years period living in Belgrade. And during this time, I'm supposed all of you are fully aware, there are other trends going on in Serbia. From where I stand and from Center for Euro-Atlantic Studies stand to us, the fact that indicted war criminals, even those who have actually committed and are sentenced for them, cries in Kosovo, because of which NATO and the Western community were forced to undertake very unpopular measures and radical ones, are frequently on a national TVs, on TVs with national frequencies, which are public good, actually, of Serbia, and so on. There is another huge trend, 2 years of campaign of alleged epidemic cancer that is shaking Serbia, caused allegedly by the usage of depleted uranium. The narrative, the fake narrative, goes even further on. Allegedly, NATO has committed ecocide in Serbia, etc., etc. So how those two conflicting and totally opposing realities contribute to your overall assessment of Serbia-NATO partnership and chances for sustainable and honest cooperation in the future? And is the strategic silence coming even from NATO officials and from almost literally everybody in this hall here, is this a strategy? Because if it is, I'm a little bit concerned that it's going to kick us back. We are facing the 20th anniversary of NATO bombing, and Russians and Chinese are already preparing themselves, it's not a secret, they are bragging about it, to produce a serial of documentaries and art films that are, I think, going to cause a huge damage that can be rectified by 3 or 4 days of decent, honest debate and assessments of all benefits of Serbia-NATO cooperation. Thank you.
Thank you so much. If I could respond to that. So first of all, I think it is important to look into what happened in the future, and therefore, not because I think we will always agree, but to be honest about that and to have all the issues on the table, I think that's a good thing. And therefore, I have answered questions, for instance, on this depleted uranium many times, including in Serbia, and we made. So this was before I arrived in NATO. This was back in 1999, and there was an independent, there was a study, and we had independent scientific assessments, and they concluded that there were no lasting health damages because of depleted uranium. Depleted uranium is a very dense metal, which some allies use in ammunition, it was also a study by UNEP, the UN Environmental Program. Reaching the same conclusion as almost 20 years ago. I am not silenced. I answer all these questions every time I ask whether it's in Serbia or in Brussels or whatever. But my message is that we have to learn from history. We have to be honest about history. I have also expressed my condolences to those who lost their loved ones. But we should not be imprisoned by history. So now we need to move forward. We need to work together. How can we achieve more together? And the exercise today shows that we can do a lot together. Helping to protect people, to save lives, develop advanced technology. Alexander mentioned artificial intelligence, robotics, and so on, and make sure that rescue workers from Serbia can work together with rescue workers from Bosnia and from Norway and from UK or from the United States and many other countries. So we should not forget about the future, but at some stage we need to be able to move forward to the benefit of all of us. Then on the neutrality of Serbia, you know, for me it is extremely important that NATO will never, and we have never done that, try to force a country into the alliance. We totally respect nations when they decide not to become members. And I spoke about the Swedes. They have decided not to aspire for membership. We have the best possible relations to Sweden, Finland, as our closest partners, and they don't want membership in NATO, perhaps because Norway is there, I don't know, but at least they're not aspiring for membership. We totally respect that. But we welcome very much that we are able to work so closely with Sweden as a partner, respecting their neutrality, and we would very much like to work even closer together with Serbia as a partner, respecting the neutrality of Serbia.
We have time for another question here, and that's it. I'm sorry.
I wanted to say a few words about this, but it doesn't matter.
Would you like to just say something?
That last question, then I'll use it.
Sonja Stjanić-Gajić, Belgrade Center for Security Policy, one of the co-organizers. Two brief questions for Mr. Stoltenberg. You mentioned hybrid threats and readiness for unpredictability. So I'm keen to know, are there also efforts to preserve democratic control over security sector in response to the hybrid threats in NATO, since NATO is a community of values and democracy is one of the values that are protected by the alliance. So how to balance readiness to respond to hybrid threats and protection of democratic control? And the question for Mr. Vučić is, have we explored all the possibilities for the maximum of cooperation within the military neutrality, or there are more areas where we can explore cooperation?
Thank you.
So democratic control is fundamental for NATO always, and that's one of the issues we are very focused on when new allies, new nations join the alliance. So when NATO has gone from 12 members back in 49 to when we were established to 29 today, democratic control of the armed forces has been one of the key criteria that has to be fulfilled to become a member of NATO. So, for instance, I worked closely with Montenegro, democratic control of the armed forces, but not only the armed forces, but also the security services in a transparent way is a key criteria to be able to join NATO. And, of course, to uphold this also for NATO allies when they are members of the alliance is also key. I think it's absolutely possible to reconcile the need for democratic control with high readiness. Because this is about making sure that we have clear rules of also guidelines and instructions for our armed forces, how to react, and also, of course, to report, and also make sure that the important decisions on when to deploy forces and so on has to be subject to political decisions. So for me, there is no contradiction between high readiness and democratic control. That's something which is absolutely possible to have at the same time.
As I already said, we are in a final phase of regarding that IPAP between 2018-2020, and there are a lot of things to be done in improving our military cooperation. And there was a lot of stuff on the other sides from different programs to be done jointly with NATO. And we'll do our best to secure the very best results in that sort of cooperation. I wanted just to refer to something what was said by Jelena Milic, and it's not a response to her. She knows that at least I always listened to her and always wanted to hear what she had to say. You see, in an entire region, we face a process, and it's not a process of improving our economic cooperation. The main process that is happening, and everybody's silent about it, it's self-victimization on a daily basis. Wherever you go, doesn't matter which part of which country you take, you just listen about the crimes that were committed by the other sides 20, 30, 50, 70, I don't know how many years. Before this time and in the past. And when you face this situation, it's not always easy to respond it. And we do our best to refrain ourselves, which is not always the case, that we are successful, but we do our best to keep things on a very low level, not to respond, or when we respond, to respond properly. Is it always like I say? No, it is not. But at least we do our best to do it this way. Wanted to say something about war criminals that you mentioned, that they are appearing somewhere in the medias. Whatever you might say, some people serve their sentences. But at the same time, those people didn't become ministers, prime ministers, presidents, or our advisors, which has been the case throughout the region. And no one is saying that to any other countries and to all the other people, because some of them would find a formal reason to reply to the Serbs. They would say, okay, but you know, the other court, or the higher court, denied that first-degree verdict, and now all of a sudden they all became nice guys. Or you know, they unfortunately killed all 18 witnesses. There is no single one that would testify about some people's terrible crimes, And that's it. And now they can do whatever they want, they can have. They can be and they can take the most important posts in their countries or so-called countries, doesn't matter. But in Serbia, although they don't occupy any single important post in this country, that becomes the biggest problem. And that's not the biggest problem. The biggest problem is whether all of us in the region, and I'm referring to our friends in the region, whether we'll be able to overcome all terrible events from the past, because it's about us. It's not about Americans, Canadians, Chinese, Japanese, it's about us. If we don't do that, you'll always have response from the other side. And then I was listening to the stories about Serbia's interference into Bosnian election. And I didn't go for a single time. At least in last 1 month, I didn't receive even Dodik here. He used to be the president. He is still the president of Republika Srpska. But you know, when someone from European Union goes there, even if that was a Croatian prime minister, who reacted? Was there anyone that said something bad about it? If I was going there, media from all over Europe would hang me, literally. If that was the same or worse done by someone from European Union, doesn't matter, that's okay. That's that sort of hypocrisy that we are facing with on a daily basis. And that's why we need to resolve it differently. To be very sincere, to say, okay, that's the problem in Serbia. Let us resolve it. But we have the same type of a problem or worse problems in this region. And that's what we need to tackle differently, sincerely, honestly, and openly. Otherwise, we would face more problems in the future. And I know that you know everything that I'm speaking about, and I know that most of the other people know this. You know, today or yesterday, I don't know when, I just got that information during our exercise in Mladenovac, that some of our people attacked two Serbian citizens, Albanian nationality. And I reacted immediately with the strongest possible words, urging Minister of Interior to resolve that issue immediately. That's something that should never happen in this country. And I'm very sad that I'm leaving to Kazakhstan immediately after we finish this conference. Otherwise, I would go there visiting them. And that's my message to our people. You can be Albanian, you can be Hungarian, you can be Croat, you can be whoever you want. You have to be free and you have to feel free here in this country. And that's what we're going to do. And we're going to secure that environment. And you'll see that we'll find those bastards that were committing that kind of attack. But we need to see that from the other sides as well. We needed 10 days to see the reaction about the guys that were attacking Pupovac in Zagreb, and not to mention the other parts of former Yugoslavia. Sorry that I was, in a way, replying in a bit more passionate way, but it's not that simple. It's not that simple. Everything's connected, everything's related, and we are all related to each other in this region. And that's why we need to sit together, always. And that's what I was saying to you, Jens. Did I surprise you with something in Kosovo or doesn't matter where else? No, just we need to speak to each other. If you want to go somewhere, let us know. If we want to go somewhere, I'll let you know. We don't need any further surprises in the future. We need to work together. We need to build trust and confidence, not to ruin it on a daily basis. Not on a daily basis. I was speaking about us and regional countries. That's it. Sorry that I took a lot of your time.
Thank you. No, I am worried about your plans. As far as time is concerned, we would have more time, but you don't have more time. On behalf of the entire audience, and those who will watch, I'm sure, some of the parts of this debate, this conversation, I want to thank you for being sincere, for being ready to both refer to the legacy, but what is very important to the future of cooperation and mutual understanding. Those two, in my opinion, are the most important interrelated processes that we need to follow both in the region and broader, and of course between Serbia and NATO. And once again, it was good to be your moderator today, and thank you for opening the Belgrade Security Forum this year in such a way.